On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Tuesday on the Horn is underway. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room where the full real-time multimedia experience is already well underway. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Cindy and Dean. Good evening, Todd. Good evening, Waggy. And good evening to our longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky. All rip-roaring and ready for another evening of live, independent, commercial-free broadcasting. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, this is The Horn, and yes, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you'll also find the handy dandy Listen Live button, as well as the PayPal button. As of yesterday's close of yesterday's program, and no change since then, We're in a $290 fundraising hole. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, letting me know that the tune in is loud and clear and 5x5. Thank you very much. Yeah, we need to raise $290 this evening to stay even and not crawl into the hole here as we enter the second half of the month of September. Yeah, everything helps. Anything from a dollar to five to however you choose to perpetuate the 10-year history of this little broadcasting endeavor. Okie doke. As an incentive to all of that, and remember, we say we try to raise a certain amount on any given evening. That does not mean that we necessarily getting out ahead is sometimes nice too. But I don't know, at $290, hey. That'll be a challenge in and of itself, but there are incentives to do so. First of all, with the close of the program last night, Sparky sent me a note and said, "Pull the pin, Bob, pull the pin." So I am pulling the pin. And that means that that Sparky is willing to match, as long as y'all do the front end, the first $100 that come in. So your 5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes 20. But we have to match it first. And if that happens, then Dr. John is on board for the other 50. And that means Dr. John will match the next 50 that comes in. See how it works? Kind of handy that way. And that would be sufficient to get us out of this little rut that we are in. And there are further incentives. If anybody wants to kick in $100, straight up, Sparky will happily provide them with your choice of either smoky ghost pepper cheese or, and my goodness, isn't it delicious? There seems to be a consensus that it is hot and yummy for those who enjoy hot stuff. Barring that, if you don't want the smoky ghost pepper cheese, he'll send you, personally, a package of pistachios grown right there in Northern California, not far at all from where he, Sparky, lives. Secondary to that, for any contribution of $75, we still have Carol's offer on the table to provide you with the Missouri River Ozark gift basket. What is that? Well, it's yummy is what it is. Carol has pulled together a potential gift basket of beef stick, your choice of buffalo wing smoked cheddar or Caribbean red hot Monterey Jack cheese, and elderberry jam straight from the Missouri River Valley. Yum, yum. So not only are you helping to keep this going, there's some culinary delights, some gustatory joy that attaches to all of this. The PayPal button, again, is at headonradionetwork.com. If you prefer to operate via the U.S. Postal Service, that address is there, too. It is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801, with the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as I don't go get the mail and I don't deal with the finances. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. And just, if you're going to use the Postal Service, shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And lo and behold, I'll let Boss Man Wayne know so he won't have to use his spider-proof gloves when he goes to the mailbox. Hello, 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 hello. Yeah, right. So that's where we find ourselves at the beginning of the program. Hopefully, this will resolve fairly quickly, and I will not have to mention it any further during the program because I don't like doing it in the first place. Now, it is. It really is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Remember, Titanic Tuesday is that day when we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing in this country. The really big thinkers, the ponderers of ponderous issues. We get the name Titanic Tuesday, of course, via our buddy Jim, who once upon a time heard the 962nd tier right-wing blather state over in Beckley opine to one of his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing acolytes. The critter called in and said, "Steve, why you reckon it is that we got fossil shellfish and the rock strata of rock beds of West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." And to his credit, the 962nd tier right-wing talker did not say that the devil had put them there to confuse the unbelievers, or that a caveman had had a clam bake somewhere millions of years ago before there were humans. No, he scientifically explained to the little wingnut that it was as a result of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes, the Titanic plates. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic finger bowls, but it was the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. Yes. Never mind the fact that the Titanic plates, or the tectonic plates, as the case may be, had nothing to do with it. This whole area was in shallow water sea once upon a time with all kinds of life in it. And there were swampy places that had, great big giant mega ferns and stuff growing in it. That's why you can still see them, for instance, imprinted in seams of coal. Yeah, exactly. Hey, thanks very much to Sal for getting us started this evening. And thank you to a dear, dear friend from the Great Northwest who just responded in total to Dr. John's challenge, so that means that has been met, and leaving Sparky's Pull the Pin challenge, $95 to go. Thank you very much. It's a great start, because, oh my God, the bills we have to pay. Woof. Some come at the beginning, some come in the middle, some come at the end, and the end is kind of the beginning, so the middle of the month ones are always tough. Thank you very much. Hopefully we will, we're not that far away now, and maybe we can even get out front. Goodness me, that would be nice. Let's see. Titanic Tuesday, though. Where to go? Because we got so much of it. Here's some Titanic intellect. Anybody know who John Guandolo is? Apparently, he is... he used to have a career as an FBI agent. John Guandolo did. But, like, as is the case with all right-wingers, there's nothing ever sufficiently disgraceful to run them completely back under the rock from which they crawled. Now, in this case, John Guandolo, well, we won't go into too great a detail, but he was found to have created a list of sexual conquests. And the sexual conquests, if you will, were with other FBI agents, as well as a confidential informant, you know, a stool pigeon. Yeah. So, kind of like Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt, who got bounced in disgrace from the Chaplain's Corps of the United States Navy, John Guandolo got bounced from the FBI. Well, I guess he resigned, actually. Having decided to exit himself from the FBI, well, John Guandolo, oh my God, has a message for America. He was talking on some right-wing radio show, I guess, with some right-winger named Steve Deese. And he's one of those impeachment people. Never mind telling you what John Guandolo said. I could just say that all night. Guandolo, Guandolo. Let's let him do it for himself.
From their point of view, the biggest part of this war is the information campaign so that our leaders will parrot this idea that this stuff has nothing to do with Islam. I mean, a sixth grader who does 30 minutes of good research will realize that's crap.
See, John Guandolo wants you to understand that if in the war we're going to get on, it's a war of good against evil. It's a war of us against them. It's a war of Christianity versus Islam. It's God against Satan. Pick a rivalry. It's Iowa State. It's Alabama Auburn. It's the Yankees and the Red Sox all rolled into. It's a big dichotomous rivalry. Good versus evil. And so he's really, really upset. And this thing has been making the rounds. I even saw a tweet from Bill Maher earlier today in which he said, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but it's just not true to say that ISIL isn't Islamic." Did he really say that? Because I listened to the speech, and I think y'all did too. This is not the Defend Obama Hour, but somehow or another, along the way, facts do actually matter, don't they? Did he say that ISIL ain't Muslim? No. No, he said that they're not what any, something along the lines of, that they're not something any respectable Muslim would want anything to do with. Which you'll recall, the Dim Leader administration said about Al-Qaeda, too. They're not the good Muslims. Right? But back to John Guandolo.
That's just simply factually untrue. And so you got to ask the question. Then are our leaders saying it, and they know they're saying it, which means there's probably treason and laws being broken there.
Huh? You want to see this, huh?
It is treason to say... I mean, okay, let's take Goober here at his word. It is treason to say that ISIL isn't Islamic? That's treasonous? That is taking up arms against the United States of America? Well, I suppose it is if President, and thanks to Carol for this, if President Blackenstein says it is, if he asks what's for breakfast, it's probably treasonous in the minds, not really minds, but the thin gray settlings that float between the ears and slosh around and about the amygdalas of people like John Guandolo. Good morning, dear, is treason if uttered by that one in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper and anti-colonialist hater of white people. Jesus. So just remember, treason is everywhere, especially with that one.
Or are they saying it and they have no clue, which means they're completely incompetent, and in either case, they should be removed from office.
Yeah, anything to get it, just to get that one out of our White House. Right? Sure. It goes on that way, but understand that even though that one is an obvious Muslim Sharia law sympathizer, you know, Barry Sotero and all of that, right? We're still going to win. We're going to win. How do I know we're going to win? Because none other than former governor and former presidential candidate and current Fox News TV Radio Rwanda blatherhead Mike Huckabee says so. Yes, he does. I promise he does. Oh, come on now, Mike. Don't hide your light under a bushel basket. Damn it. Poor old tired computer. Now, darn it. Poor old tired computers, it gets around to things in its own good time. What I love, and this comes from something that Right Wing Watch tells us was called Star Spangled Sunday. It happened this past Sunday. I mean, there was a super moon a few nights ago, but I had no idea that this past Sunday was Star Spangled. Oh, this is annoying. Anytime, fellas. There we go. Hopefully this will be rolling any minute now. I prefer to let people like Mike Huckabee speak for themselves where the opportunity presents itself. If the opportunity presents itself.
I want to remind you of something. In case you have not read the end of the book, I want to encourage you to slip over there and do it. Because I got good news for all of the dispirited, disquieted Christians in America who somehow are afraid that the sons of Ishmael.
Oh, God. The sons of Ishmael. And I presume that the book he's talking about is, you know, the Bible. The sons of Ishmael. That's where we were.
Who are challenging us now in the Middle East will overwhelm the sons of Isaac. Let me assure you, I have read the end of the book. My dear friend, we win!
We. Who's that we, Mike Huckabee? We win. The sons of Ishmael and the sons of Isaac. Is Mike Huckabee saying, sons of Isaac, we? I don't know. I mean, is there a bar mitzvah? Is it maybe a bris in order for Mike? Is he a sons of Isaac now? But notice, okay, maybe some of you aren't up on your biblical iconography. In the myth of Abraham and his wife Sarah have not been able to do any baby making, and Sarah gets up around 90, and they kind of give up. And somewhere along the way, Sarah has a maid servant okay? Otherwise known as the help. And there in the book of Genesis, having given up on being able to give a son to poor old Abram, that was his name back then, a lot of name changing went on, she despairs and says, why don't you go over there to the help tent and give me a little rest and get after it on Hagar, my maidservant. I'm sure she won't mind. She is, after all, my slave. So Abram says, cool, and goes over there, and the next thing you know, he's rutting away on Hagar. And Hagar conceives and brings forth a son, whose name, according to Genesis, is Ishmael. But, well, it doesn't play out so well because Sarah, it turns out, doesn't, I guess she feels a little inferior or something. So she says, wait a minute. This ain't going to do. There she is every day. That Hagar just giving me that look like, I gave your husband a baby and you couldn't. We got to get rid of her. Right? So, yeah, he's got. And so Hagar gets cast off into the desert and taken her son Ishmael with her. And that's the origin myth, because then, lo and behold, some strangers walk into camp. And when you're back in Genesis, any time a stranger walks into camp, 9 times out of 10, it's an angel. Whether they're walking into the tent of Abram or knocking on the door at Lot's place in Sodom. Remember, Lot sent his daughters out to be raped by the neighbors instead of, well, anyway. Heroes of the Old Testament. So anyway, and this is when Abram and Sarah are old. Now back before that, Abram and Sarah had gone down into Egypt, yea verily, at which point Abram had pimped out Sarah to the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh was digging on Sarah, and Sarah was digging on the Pharaoh, and Abram said, it's okay, she's not my wife. She's my sister. She's my sister. She's my sister. Pharaoh later found out that Abram had been lying to him, again, heroes of the Old Testament, and said, wait a minute, there is a plague upon the land, and it is because I have been banging upon thy wife. Get thee out of here and take thy wife, who is not thy sister, or maybe she is, I don't know, maybe you're just weird, but get them out of the land of Chem. And so later on, when Sarah's about 90 or something, because people were living to hundreds of years old back then, the strangers come along, and I don't know, they drink down to the dregs of their camel dung tea or whatever those barbarians were drinking. And he said, hey, by the way, Sarah, you're going to conceive a child. I go figure. And she says, how can this be, for I am ancient and all dried up? Nope, you're going to have a baby. And so along comes Isaac. No, I know. It's just reading it is enough to send you off to the liquor bottle, let alone trying to believe that it's literally true. Nope, really happened. And so it sets, in the way of mythologies, And mythologies world mythologies are all full of brothers competing with one another. In the Popol Vuh of the Maya, there are the hero twins who descend into the underworld and defeat death and stuff. And there are twins in Greek mythology and Roman mythology, and I don't know, are there some twins in Norse mythology? Seeing as how women generally only have one baby at a time, twins take on a kind of magical property, I guess. But so here's these two brothers, and they get set up in Genesis as a way of explaining the, because this is all written after the fact, and it didn't happen in the first place, and it wasn't real. But it's a way of explaining a sort of mythic, explaining mythically why there is conflict between various and sundry different peoples and why some peoples are different and better than other peoples. For instance, back when in the Lot story, when Lot's daughters decide to jump the bones of their tired old daddy and have some incest sex with daddy and make some babies that way, the reason for all of that is to explain that the babies were the father of the Moabites and the Ammonites, who went on down the line a little ways. If you read along, you find out that they had to be killed because the Lord God said, kill them all, yada, yada, yada. Big one for killing them all, the old Yahweh was back then. Kill them all, let me sort them out. So that's what you have here. But just listen to the booger eaters clap. Oh, they're just so happy to hear they're going to win. Oh, they're going to win because it's just like a basketball game. They're going to win because that's what it says in the end of the book. Presumably, I guess we're talking about Revelations, which is one long hallucination. Yeah, Revelations is to the Bible what In a Gata De Vida is to rock and roll.
And our flag still stands. Our flag is still there.
Yeah, thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch for pulling this swill out of the moronosphere. We're going to win. Really, in his address, Mike Huckstaby, according to Right Wing Watch, in the setup said that way back when he was just a little Razorback down there in Arkansas, he used to stay up late to hear rebroadcasts of the Arkansas games, because even though he knowed they had already won, he wanted to hear them win again. Really? So, there we go. We're going to... Because apparently this Huckstaby, and he kind of was betraying it there. Most people who were sitting there just a clapping away and chewing on their caramel apples and getting all sticky with their cotton candy and shit, they didn't realize it. But you know, dumb bastard was calling for World War III. He wants a global war of the sons of Isaac versus the sons of Ishmael. And he's just going to sort of inveigle himself into the sons of Isaac part of it all, because we win, and he wants to be on the winning side. Even though in World War, at least the next one, what did Einstein say? I do not know how the next World War will be fought, but I know how the one after that will, with sticks and stones. Right Wing Intellect, Titanic Tuesday, hot diggity damn. Asa pointing out, you know, I love how casually adultery in the Bible gets treated. Yeah, it's charming, isn't it? But it's not adultery, because see, Hagar was property. And remember, all women back then were property. So there were no concepts of rape, really. And if there was, by the time you get to the Ten Commandments and everything, there are concepts of rape, but they're property crimes. They're not personal crimes of violence, they're property crimes. Because women are property. Thank you, Carol. Carol says, you make it sound like you're reading from 1 Cletus 14:3. that's only because I was. I mean, go read Genesis. It is full of horrifying tales. Just really gross, icky stuff. I mean, the next time somebody makes a movie about the book of Genesis and it's out there, it should probably, they could probably save a ton of money just by using the Deliverance soundtrack. Oh, okay, thank you, Kara. Freyr was Freya's doppelganger in Norse mythology. See, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Jeremy wants to know, based upon the clip from Mike Huxterby, Reverend Brother, who was trying to take our flag down? Well, we didn't get. So that'd be your sons of Ishmael. Yep, that'd be them. Oh, by the way, just to back up for a minute to last night's program. I got an email earlier today from Steve pointing out something about, what was his name, Sheriff Gaynor, Goomer, whatever, down there in Midland County, Texas, who said that he was ready to send the ISIS hordes that was going to cross the dried-out Rio Grande. He's going to send their ugly heads to hell, right? And he knows that there are ISIS cells in Juarez and Chihuahua State because... we know people who know people who have found Koran books down there on the trail. And Steve pointed out, you know, if that story was real, no self-respecting Muslim would leave the Koran lying on the ground. And that's absolutely true. So if there was some Koran books out there, and I don't think there were. But if there were some Koran books out there, they is likely left there by some of your militia types or your oath keepers or freedom protectors. All right, and you know, just sort of like a right-wing Easter hunt down there in the dried-out Rio Grande Valley. Hey, look, look over there by the mesquite. Ain't that a Koran book? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeremy pointing out, Huxtermania is running wild on the small-minded. Yeah, what do you want to bet that little soiree Sunday night was pay-per-view? And we will definitely be reading from First Cletus tomorrow evening for prayer meeting Wednesday. No getting around it. Oh my heavenly days. Right-wing intellect. Okay, let's just completely shift gears and go somewhere else. This is from my email box. This is one of those pitches that I probably get 100 right-wing pitches for every one that's progressive or liberal. This one comes from somebody named Sherwood Ross, and there's a whole bunch of people included in it. I don't know. And it's threats of prosecution, bribes, and bribes used to pacify residents of Newtown and to suppress information about Sandy Hook. You might want to get the duct tape and the hockey puck for this one. The cruelty in interview contact Dr. Jim Fetzer. Newtown has been given $50 million to build a new K-4 elementary school, even though the average cost nationwide is only $7 million, and the families of the alleged victims have received more than $27 million in donations from a sympathetic public. Moreover, there are reports that gag orders, there are reports that, there are no links in this to any reports, there are no PDFs of the gag order, no. Moreover, there are reports that gag orders were issued to residents within 25 miles of the school, apparently including the use of national, apparently, oh, those crafty little adverbs, apparently including the use of national security letters, NSLs. See, we get NSLs in parentheses, but no links to them, from the FBI, which recipients are not even allowed to acknowledge they have received. Which kind of begs the question, if they're not allowed to acknowledge that they've received them, how does how does this goober know that they were gotten? But you don't smarten up the chumps. The highly unusual letters have been used to direct residents to cease and desist from talking under threat of prosecution. I didn't know they were talking under threat of prosecution. Says Dr. James Fetzer, former U.S. Marine Corps officer, a professor emeritus and journalist for Veterans Today, who has been investigating the case. Not only were no children killed, Fetzer said, but the school was closed by 2008. Yes, there were no children at all at Sandy Hook Elementary School back a couple of years ago in December when all of this happened, and had been used. See, Sandy Hook was being used by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to run exercises in cooperation with the Department of Homeland Security in the past. Francis A. Boyle, a constitutional lawyer, an expert on human rights at the University of Illinois School of Law, has characterized NSLs as totalitarian. See how he just slips that in there? I'll bet you Francis Boyle, constitutional lawyer and expert on human rights at the University of Illinois School of Law, has characterized NSLs as totalitarian. Law school professors write those kind of things, but by putting this in there, it makes it sound like Francis A. Boyle is down with Dr. Fetzer and the assertion that Sandy Hook never happened. Quoting Francis A. Boyle, they violate and nullify the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. They are totalitarian. Okay. But I'll bet you there's not a word, and there's no citation to the article, and I'll bet you there's not a word in there about Sandy Hook either. Dr. Fetzer has written to the FBI to affirm or deny their use in Newtown, but several days have passed with no response. Written to them? What you do with that, Dr. Fetzer? You former Marine, you investigative journalist, you professor emeritus, you. What you do is you drop a Freedom of Information Act request on them. But then they have to respond to it, and they write back and say, sorry, no such things. So this way you just say, well, he's written to the FBI. The FBI has not written back. Fetzer says, I suppose it's a bit much to expect the FBI to admit its own complicity in a crime of this magnitude, but that is what the evidence suggests. The purpose of the event, which was several years in planning, Fetzer said, was to promote the administration's anti-gun agenda, such as Attorney General Holder's Operation Longevity, to reduce public support for the Second Amendment and the public's right to keep and bear arms. When we all know we're going to need our right to keep and bear arms, when the ISIL hordes, all 35,000 of them, come pouring across the dried-out Rio Grande to attack Midland County, Texas, where and you know, any of those who don't get their ugly heads sent to hell are just going to keep on boiling northward, and we're going to need all of our freedom protectors out there, because if they're not there, well, Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker says it's going to get all of us killed. All of us. In addition to Mr. Holder and the president, other officials who appeared to play crucial roles in the hoax include Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy, Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman, the Connecticut State Police, Newtown Police, Newtown School Board, and the Newtown Bee Weekly, which apologized when it was forced to retract an interview with the school's principal after official reports declared she was officially already dead prior to the interview. Oh, my God. A team of Sandy Hook students, including three professors. Really? Sandy Hook? Sandy Hook students included three professors? Damn. Have published what Dr. Fetzer describes as overwhelming evidence that the school shootings are a hoax, including multiple studies on VeteransToday.com establishing the following. Sandy Hook Elementary School was closed by 2008 and used as a prop for the drill conducted on December 14, 2012. Local residents were aware that it had been abandoned and was being used for drills, but apparently did not speak up because of the use of NSLs. NSLs. Can you begin to fathom? Because it's not real easy for me. Can you imagine, can you fathom the degree of disdain and the capitalist frenzy that has to attend something like this? The degree of disdain for the children and the parents, the children who were slaughtered and the parents who are still grieving to this day. Oh, they're not there. They're not real. They're no more real than were all those people that were on that plane that wasn't a plane that didn't get flown into the Pentagon. This means, Dr. Fetzer concludes, that the U.S. government has been committing acts of terror on the American people to instill fear and manipulate them into supporting its own political agenda! The circumstances surrounding Sandy Hook Elementary School are Machiavellian in that federal, state, and local authorities came together to perform a stunt deliberately calculated to strike fear into the heart of every American parent and child. Okie dokie. I had no idea that was the definition of Machiavellian. And this thing goes on and on. Adam Lanza did not exist. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, just to be out there, for the sake of hustling up a few bucks off the right-wing carnival midway wanderers, to just crap on the memory of murdered children. I mean, what kind of low-down, no-good, lower-than-a-snake's-belly-in-a-wagon-rut absence of character does that require? Or maybe it just requires, greed. Irish Dave pointing out, I think you're mistaken, Bob. No self-respecting Islamer would leave his prayer shawl rug on the ground without leaving the weighty Koran on it to keep it from being blown away. Or, boots on the ground or something. These are just little non-stories, but they point to a larger reality. We're in a mess. We're in real trouble. Kentucky's Senator Runt Paul and that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist that he is, had he not been so busy senatoring, I'm sure they would have probably cast him as John Galt in part three. Really? Part three? Yes, part three of Atlas Shrugged. Senator Runt Paul has convinced himself and that thing on his head, or maybe the thing on his head convinced him, that America needs him to be president. Yeah, really. You may recall Runt Paul has a problem of publishing things that he didn't actually write. Well, he does occasionally say things that he actually says. And the latest from Runt Paul and the thing on his head, I think the thing on his head does the thinking, is his, well, in addition to his presidential declaration that he, by God, even though he's an isolationist libertarian, he, by God, would support bombing the living snot out of Syria and Iraq some more, because freedom, because the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing ignorati, desperately want to get our war on. So, yeah, lo and behold, back a couple of days ago, he shows up in New Hampshire Stan. And Scott Conroy over at Real Clear Politics describes the people listening to him as young, well-lubricated activists. I assume by well-lubricated he's indicating alcohol because, well, I just don't like to think about other people. Never mind. As Scott Conroy writes, as he addressed the crowd of young, well-lubricated activists who packed the bar at a minor league baseball stadium here Thursday night, The Kentucky Senator's Anthony Weiner jokes were hitting their target just as squarely as his diatribes against the NSA's eavesdropping program. Right, September 13th, 2014. And Runt Paul and that thing on his head are running around making Anthony Weiner jokes? Really? So one of the little weirdos stands up to ask Runt Paul on that thing in his head, real policy question. And he says, "You spoke for a bit on the executive orders tonight. If you were to receive the presidency, for me, really, with a bow and everything, if you were to receive the presidency." Must have been some pretty cheap well liquor. "Would you repeal previous executive orders and actually restrain the power of the presidency? Oh, golly, Runt Paul, tell us you would." And in a truly comic bit of understatement, our author here, reporter Conroy, says Paul didn't have to think very long before coming up with an answer. I'm guessing that being Runt Paul, he didn't think at all. An answer that would exhilarate both the khaki-clad Alex P. Keaton lookalikes in the crowd and their anti-establishment, fashionably bespectacled counterparts. Oh, here it is. Get that hockey puck back out. You didn't take it out, did you? "I think the first executive order that I would issue would be to repeal all previous executive orders," Paul said to booming cheers. You know, kind of like the cheers that Reverend Brother Governor Mike Huckstery got when he said, "We win. I've read the end of the book. We win." So, yes, Titanic intellect, Runt Paul, says that he would repeal all executive orders by an executive order. I know. Just quit trying. But here's the fun part. Real Clear Politics then sat down with Runt Paul the following morning for an interview of their own. At which point he was asked about getting rid of what this article describes as over two centuries of executive orders. And he replied, "It's a nice idea. You'd obviously have to look at all the executive orders to see that there's not something in there. But the thing is, you could sunset them all and really repeal them all, and then you could start over. And if there are any ones that are good, you could reinstitute things or ask Congress to reinstitute things that need to be done." Here's the fun part, because remember, we're talking about Titanic intellects. Mr. Conroy continues, "But did that mean Paul would be okay with nixing, temporarily at least, President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation? Or what about President Truman's order to desegregate the military?" Paul's eyes widened a bit, the article notes, as if to confirm that he hadn't quite thought it completely through. Once again, Real Clear Politics being rather charitable, asserting that Runt Paul does any thinking at all. Here, then, is the answer. No, I'm not going to do that. This is not to say that I did not think of inserting the Miss Teen USA, Miss South Carolina answer about the Iraq at this point, but no, I'm not going to do that. No, can't make me. "Well, I mean, I think those are good points." The Emancipation Proclamation and the desegregation of the military. "I think those are good points. And it was an offhand comment. So, obviously, I don't want to repeal the Emancipation Proclamation and things like that. Technically, you'd have to look and see exactly what that would mean. But the bottom line is, it's a generalized statement that I think too much is done by executive order, particularly under this president. Too much power has gravitated to the executive. Meanwhile, no one has shown the dear senator, bless his heart, and we all understand what we mean down below the Mason-Dixon line when we say, bless his heart, or God love him. God love him, he hadn't thought it through. But they didn't show him a side-by-side comparison, say, with the executive orders issued by that one in our White House and, say, Dim Leader or Dim Leader's daddy or Ronnie Reagan or Bill Clinton. No. Because too much power has gravitated to the executive because the executive to which the power is gravitated, well, you know, I mean, out there in space... Out there in space, light and energy and everything gravitates toward black holes. It's the blackness that draws does the gravitating. And that's why it's all, that's why all that, all that political power has been gravitating. Just sucks all the whiteness, I mean light, right out of our universe. And remember, yes, remember, they clapped and clapped that room full of well-lubricated people. They clapped and clapped when Ron Paul and that thing on his head said they wanted to get rid of the executive orders. And here's a real knee slapper. He's out there trying to make sure that he keeps on the good side of his libertarian cred, even though he's okay with going and, you know, bombing some brown people some more. And granted, you know, some of them may be brown people that just need bombing, you know, ISIL. But along the way, we're gonna bomb some brown mommies and some brown daddies and some brown little boys and some brown little children and some brown grannies and some brown granddaddies, and you know. If you're going to make a Middle Eastern democracy, you have to turn some grannies and granddaddies inside out. America. Hell yeah. But he said, maybe 4 years ago or 8 years ago, people said, oh, we want these liberty people out of our party. Molon lave, baby. Wash that cantaloupe. Now they realize we've got to have new people in our party, even though the new people in our party are not new people at all. They're just more, they're just rebranded John Birchers. And if we can get along, we can become a bigger party, particularly in New Hampshire, where there's a big liberty movement. They're actually working pretty well together. You know, out there building Galt's Gulch. All of that stuff. Speaking of which, on this here Titanic Tuesday, oh, by the way, back to the mailbag real quick, note from Steve. Yes, the iron hand of Barack Obama. I just ran into a lamp pole walking west on 42nd Street, hysterically laughing. Steve, you have no idea what that does for me. The idea that that somebody can be. I mean, do you realize how far we've come in 10 years? Do you realize what this means? 10 years ago, you could barely walk from the kitchen to the bathroom and still hear the program unless you turned your computer speakers up to 11. Now, with the advent of wireless internet technology, we got Steve walking down 42nd Street, walking into lampposts, or nearly, contemplating the iron hand of President Blackenstein. I'm so stealing that. Thank you, Carol. Note coming in. Hey! Do we win one of them Ozark gift baskets? if and we correctly identify that thing on Runt Paul's head? Well, who knows? If the price is right. Jesus. Just ran into a lamp pole walking west on 42nd Street, hysterically laughing. Oh, wait. Okay, we need some clarification here, Steve. Irish Dave wants to know, is Steve blaming Obama or is he going to blame yourself? Oh. Steve asks in all seriousness, how do these people get up in the morning when there are bogeymen everywhere? How really can people be this chronically afraid and hateful of, let's admit it, Barack Obama? Well, see, the fact that you're not afraid, Steve, just means that you're one of the sheeple down there in the veal pen. Yeah. I mean, because everybody knows Barack Obama's the same as George W. Bush. He's the devil. And that's from the so-called left. Ha! What left? We haven't even gotten to the right wing, it just gets worse. Hey, thanks very much to Thomas for taking us a little further down the road this evening on the fundraising. Thomas just doubled his money thanks to Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. We are now only $65 away from getting out of the hole this evening. Thank you. Hopefully we can make it the rest of the way and maybe a little bit further. Remember, the Ozark gift basket is out there, $75. The offer of the California-grown pistachios or the smoky ghost pepper cheese is out there, $100. Just let me know. Let me know. So there, terrifying as it is a tiny little peek into what passes for the mind of Runt Paul. You ever notice how low the bar is for right-wing intellectual? I mean, I think the honest-to-God bar for right-wing intellectual is manage to tie shoelaces this morning with shoes on correct feet. Consider who the intellectuals are. Ted Cruz, Runt Paul, Paul Ryan. Mentioned Atlas Shrugged a minute ago. Great article at Alternet by R.J. Esko, who has been on this program a million years ago. When you actually sit down and read, as I did, I read it once eons ago. I read it again a few years ago when Agnes brought me a copy that she'd found on some cutout table at the library or something. Look, honey! Oh, no, dear. I love you, and you brought me a book. That means I have to read the book, and I will read the book. And we did. I mean, it was real Brady Bunch kind of stuff. The kids were younger, and we'd be at the end of the day, and Agnes and I would be laying there in the bed at night, you know, me with my Mike Brady glasses on. No, I don't have any Mike Brady glasses, and she doing her best Carol Brady, and I'd sit there with my copy, my ponderous copy of Atlas Shrugged, reading along, and every now and then I'd just make one of those exasperated, or I'd start cackling. I'd start cackling like I was about to lay an egg or hooting like a barn owl, and Agnes would look over at me and say, well, that's just not fair. What? And I'd start reading to her from it. But if you've ever actually read Atlas Shrugged and you realized what a great steaming pile of mendacious, right-wing, uncreative, barely readable, certainly not literature dung it is. And I mean from the standpoint of bad writing. I'm not talking about, you know, disliking the philosophy. I dislike the philosophy. But Jesus, the writing is terrible. I mean, you want some good right-wingy libertarian writing? I've said it before. go read Robert Heinlein, science fiction author. I grew up on this stuff. It's lovely writing. You cannot help but have a lot of thoughts provoked by, say, Stranger in a Strange Land. The politics that are espoused and discussed inside The Moon is a Harsh Mistress are really quite interesting. Oddly enough, they're every bit as libertarian as anything. Well, say what you will about the Bolsheviks, but they didn't have to put up with Ayn Rand, now did they? They managed to foist her off on us. Well, Irish Dave, with a question, if you'd actually read Atlas Shrugged, would you admit it? Yeah, I admit it. Not proud of it, but I admit it. It's, you know, kind of like drinking Schaefer beer back in college. I mean, it was $1.06 a six pack or something. And yes, I'm not proud of it, but I did. Chaffer. But over at Alternate, because, you know, there is no more titanic intellect in the right wing than Ayn Rand. I mean, if they ever got complete political power, this whole country would be festooned with statues to that awful old woman who despised public giving and yuck, and yet at the end was like, yeah, sign me up for some of that Medicare. I'll take some food stamps. Yep, sure will. I mean, there's philosophy and there's philosophy. And then there's all those gross, creepy, semi-sexual stories of Alan Greenspan sitting at her feet and looking longingly at her creepy old bunionated toes. Ugh. But anyway, R.J. Esko over at Alternet has written, and in part because Atlas Shrugged Part 3, Oh Merciful God, Isn't It Over Yet, has been released to a thunderous chorus of crickets. I read one review not long back in which the reviewer talked about nothing but the guy who played John Galt's hair. But the R.J. Esko's article at Alternet is really quite a fun little read. And along the way, he reminds us why it is that the book is so awful. Because it is. At one point, R.J. Esko says, how misguided, how downright strange is Atlas Shrugged? Rand insists that the most sexually desirable human beings, because there are sex scenes in the book, and those are the ones that I would wind up reading, and not as any sort of a turn-on or anything, just because I was over there cackling, and Agnes would say, no, you found another one, didn't you? Yeah, I did. Read it. And so I would. R.J. Esko writes, how misguided, how downright strange is Atlas Shrugged? Rand insists that the most sexually desirable human beings on the planet are wealthy male CEOs, a conceit which conjures up images of Charles Koch as Austin Powers performing a mating dance to the sounds of Let's Get It On as a comely stranger reclines on a rotating sofa. Oh, thanks for the image. Do I make you Randian, baby? Do I, huh? But the auto-executive eroticism, R.J. is right clever, becomes considerably less amusing when one realizes that one of Rand's heroes is a rapist. Remember what I said earlier about how in the Bible, rape is a property crime? Yeah. Get the duct tape and the hockey puck back out. He held her, pressing the length of his body against hers with a tense, purposeful insistence, his hand moving over her breasts as if he were learning a proprietor's intimacy with her body, a shocking intimacy that needed no consent from her, no permission. She knew that fear was useless, that he would do what he wished, that the decision was his, that he left nothing possible to her except the thing she wanted most, to submit.
Oh, Margaret!
No, really, that really, yeah. And there are million, and remember, upstanding, confession-attending Roman Catholic Paul Ryan used to hand this out to all of his little interns who would come to work in his Washington congressional office. Kind of makes you wonder if Paul Ryan ever actually read the book, or if he did, maybe he was hoping to engender some of that wanting most to submit business. His hand moving over her breasts as if he were learning a proprietor's intimacy. What is that? I mean, that conjures up images of general store dry goods guys out there humping the flour sacks. There. Oh, my God. And all of this is by way of encompassing a nasty little bit of fraud that's going down in Chile, where some libertarian types, otherwise known as rip-off artists, have apparently successfully ripped a bunch of people off, you know, good, well, Simon Simple and Simon Pure, libertarians who wanted to go and live in a regulatory free paradise of libertarian Randian randiness. Really, Galt's Gulch. Only here's the problem. It turns out that Galt's Gulch didn't belong to the people who were selling Galt's Gulch. Yeah. Although, and even though the thing is just mired up in an absolute storm of fraud, it turns out that you can still buy, according to R.J. Eskow, your own $125,000 parcel of acreage at Galt's Gulch. They'll give you a deed and everything. Maybe the one to Atlantic Avenue off the Monopoly Board. It's hard to say. Oh, God, the little libertarians deserve everything that comes to them. He writes, one of the reasons the Gulch crowd chose Chile is because of that country's lax regulatory environment. Regulations exist for a reason. The Randians' blind hatred of them and of the democratic governments which established them flies in the face of reason. Would they object to the recent regulatory actions which resulted in Graco, the baby products corporation, recalling more than 6 million infant car seats? Would it change their minds if they knew that Graco's improperly designed strollers resulted in the strangulation deaths of 4 babies in 2010? Well, that's just the free market at work. That's capitalism. I mean, if you're going to have a free market, every now and then you got to strangle a baby. Ay, ay, ay. He continues, is it any wonder that a venture inspired by this book eventually defrauded its customers? And yet, despite the allegations against them, Gawker's Adam Weinstein tells us that GGC Developers, Galt's Gulch Community, Galt's Gulch Chile, I don't know, will still sell you a 1,200-acre master estate, don't say that too fast, for a mere $500,000. I was wrong. It wasn't $125,000. And as long as you're also willing to extend GGC Developers a $2 million Founders Club loan along with that $500,000, which they'll totally pay you back, they swear. Can you imagine? Dare you imagine, even for a moment, just for a teeny tiny little moment, these freaks actually getting their hands on the engines of government? I don't know about you, but that gives me a case of the fantods. Sheesh. So here we are, coming up on a quarter past the hour. I'll put the quietus to the filibobster for the moment. Thanks very much to Steve, who apparently knocked himself senseless on that lamppost on 42nd Street because he decided to jump in and issue a challenge of his own. He said, here's a $35 challenge to close us out. Steve will double whoever's money up to $35 to finish out the evening's fundraising, and that would be wonderful. So it's out there. Your 35 is matched by Steve if the 35 comes in and we climb out of the early second part of September hole that we are in. Anybody interested, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Let's go to the phone line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Not much. Been quite a while since I called in.
It has. I'm glad for whatever technology is allowing you to do so now.
Well, kind of an old technology, one oldie but goodie, called the phone line. I'm glad to have it, though, because I still can't get the Skype to work on my computer. So I'd like to
More of that accessibility software?
Yes, sir. The company that I got this software from just can't seem to help me. And it's really aggravating because they got a great idea as far as simplicity of operation. I would recommend this software to anybody. But I can't do that because the customer service has just been downright bad. So, you know, anybody that I know, that I meet, that may be either visually impaired or totally blind, I can't recommend it to them. And that's sad because I know a lot of people that would be great technology for them. So, but anyway, I didn't call about that. I called about a couple different things. One thing I've been thinking about the last couple of days, as you've done these, listed the different challenges that are on the table, I know we've got thousands of listeners out there in the Horn family. And I would challenge people, I guess, you want to use that word. Everybody's probably got a spare dollar. Now, if I can do it, which I'm planning on putting it in the mail tomorrow, if I can put a spare dollar into an envelope and mail it to you, I'm guessing the other 9,999 of us listening could also do the same thing. And if we all did that just once a month did that, you wouldn't have any deficit.
No, there wouldn't be. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to make that happen. But, I mean, we still have people who very kindly provide a monthly subscription. And that function exists over there at the website. That's available. It's just, I believe you've done that, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I haven't checked. because it's so inaccessible to me. Some sites are very accessible, some other ones because of the software challenges. For instance, PayPal's statement, billing statements, are very hard for me to go over. And yours is the only site that I use PayPal for. So I haven't even checked in the last month to see if it's active or not. But I know I can put a dollar in an envelope and mail it to you. And I know, like you're mentioning, I can do the subscription and do a dollar a month. If we all just did that, you wouldn't have a deficit. And I know you appreciate the larger donations. You appreciate donations of any kind. But it's always been something, this goes way back to when I was a young man sitting in a church listening to a preacher ask for donations and knowing a woman in our congregation, and it wasn't a small congregation. She was driving a car that was just, jalopy did not describe it. That was too good a word for it.
Rolling wreck?
Her starter was literally hanging out of the steering column, the switch. And I didn't have the money to help her at that time. And probably no one individual had the money to help her. But I always thought if we as a church, and at that time it had probably about 1,000 regular members, give or take. And, I don't understand when these preachers get up and you hear about prayer requests and things like that in church. That's all it takes. That's what community is. Back in the old days, so we have heard how people got together to build a barn and things like that. It costs no one individual a whole lot of anything, but together the community could do a lot. And so that's why it's kind of been on my mind the last couple of days to call you and just mention this to people. And hopefully when one goes to the mailbox, he might actually not have to wear his gloves. So enough said on that. I'm just hoping maybe more than a few people will take me up on that idea and donate a dollar, just a dollar. Because even as poor as I am, I probably waste a dollar a day on something, you know. That's just, we all do that. We all buy a coat that we don't need, you know, that kind of thing. The other thing I wanted to bring up is this domestic violence situation in the NFL and all over. And I've heard back and forth, the back and forth that goes on talking about suspend so-and-so, kick him out of the league, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as it's come out, and I tend to believe the report, the NFL did get a copy of the full video of what actually happened in the elevator long before they...
I believe the cops are now saying that was provided to them.
Yep. And my point in this is, I believe Ray Rice will play again this year. And why I do is he's got a really good case. You gave me a punishment. You had all the evidence when you gave me that punishment. And therefore, it's like double jeopardy. Man,
It's not double jeopardy because double jeopardy applies to criminal
legally.
Process.
Yeah, right.
Hang on a minute, though, because you've opened the door, Kevin, to something that I want to see if we can expand into a larger issue. I was talking to a friend earlier today up in Wisconsin, and he made the point that the Ray Rice issue is significant, and the video is just horrifying. But yep. Meanwhile, while we are obsessing over Ray Rice, there's a little another case that's out there that isn't yep. getting half even of the attention.
Yep.
And it is a much I don't want to you know create some sort of scale of competition for this sort of thing, but there's a case that didn't get nearly the reporting, having to do with the U.S. District Judge for I think the Middle District or Northern District, I can't remember, Alabama. Okay.
Yep.
Now, this U.S. District Judge, who has been confirmed into his seat by the Senate of the United States, is the same U.S. District Judge who participated in the railroading of Don Siegelman at the insistence of Karl Rove. So far, so yep. good?
Yep. I'm familiar with it.
Now, he went to some sort of thingamajig, some sort of gathering, some sort of get-together in Atlanta, Georgia. And at the thingamajig in Atlanta, Georgia, he got all righteously liquored up. And once he got himself all good and liquored up, and his name is Mark Fuller, once he got himself all good and liquored up, he decided to set about beating upon his wife.
Yeah.
And apparently in the 911 call that she placed, you can hear him whomping her.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the guy has a history. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported that in 2012, records filed in Fuller's then-pending divorce included allegations of domestic violence, drug abuse, and an affair with a court bailiff. Now, this is one of those paragons of jurisprudence that was, of course, appointed to the bench, Kevin, by Dim Leader.
Yep.
And hence the ability that Karl Rove had to exert pressure upon him. But here's the fun part. Here's where it gets really, really interesting. Having beaten his wife and having been charged with a misdemeanor for domestic violence, he entered a some sort of diversion program where he will not apparently have a conviction.
Yep.
Now, he did go, you know, he did get booked. I'm looking at his mugshot here from the CNN story. He is from Montgomery, Alabama. Officers observed injuries to the victim. She was treated on scene by paramedics but refused to be transported to the hospital. Mr. Fuller was not injured. Well, you know, thank heaven for small favors.
Yep.
Now, they put him in the tank overnight. But that's the end of it. He was allowed to bond out on his own signature in Atlanta, Georgia, even though he is not domiciled anywhere in Georgia. If this was an ordinary human being, he would be deemed by the court to be a flight risk.
Yep.
He didn't even enter a plea of not guilty. Okay? Now this is the whole setup for all of this. Nobody necessarily knows about this guy, Kevin, because he's not playing football on Sundays.
Exactly. Yep.
But here then, is the real, oh, I don't know, the cherry on top of the cow pie. Nothing's going to happen to him, and he is going to remain a sitting Article III United States District Court judge for the rest of his life.
Yep.
He can't be fired, Kevin.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
He cannot be removed from office by any save, and this becomes a little bit important. He cannot be removed from office by anyone save the Congress of the United States, specifically the House of Representatives,
yep,
who would have to hold impeachment hearings against him.
Yep.
Now, once upon a time, a federal district judge named Alcee Hastings was removed from the bench via impeachment. He now sits in the Congress.
Yep.
And it's not even the same story. I mean, it's not even anything approaching the same fact pattern.
Nope.
Congress did its job with regard to Alcee Hastings,
nope,
arguably. I mean, but you tell me, can you imagine John Boehner's House majority impaneling an impeachment committee against a George W. Bush Republican judicial nominee?
No. The obvious answer. And I guess this is why I bring up this Ray Rice thing, because the hypocrisy of all of it has begun to annoy me. You bring up this case with Ray Rice, and rightly so, there was indignation about what happened. But where's the indignation towards this judge in the same way? I've kind of heard about this story, but I'm not real familiar with it. I can't recall hearing anybody from NOW or any other women's group on any of the networks complaining about it. It's all been about Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and all the other football players. And if it's a first-time offense, I don't have a problem with any diversionary program, but let's be honest, most domestic abusers, it's not their first offense to begin with. It may be the first one they're charged with, but they've done it before 99% of the time.
Yeah, kind of like drunk driving.
Right. And I work in the field where I've treated domestic violence victims. I've gone to the trouble of taking one particular person into a room by herself and sitting her down and telling her bluntly, if you don't leave this man, I won't be treating you for injuries. I'll be picking you up in the morgue van. That's how bad it was. It wasn't the first time we'd gone to her. It wasn't the first time that she'd been beaten up. But at the same time, when I hear the story with Ray Rice, it also annoys me, because just like with this judge and the Republican Party, for that matter, all the tenters, birthers, booger eaters.
Yeah, the litany.
They put themselves up as being family values, and yet Roger Goodell essentially got caught is the only reason that suspension of Ray Rice went beyond two games. If that cop had not spoken up and said, yeah, I sent the video to him. I sent that to him 2 weeks ago. That was to him before there was even a story out about it. They had all the evidence they needed. And So what do you do then? I just am really... there's so many feelings I have toward it because you know and I know as well that there are going to be spouses of professional athletes to get back at the spouse are going to claim there was domestic violence where there wasn't any. And you and I also know that there are also going to be spouses like Mrs. Rice who are going to not want their husband prosecuted or suspended because of the children or because of the money. And somewhere, somebody, and I speak in that in terms of a country, not as a football league, someone's got to come up with some guidelines for
Well, let's back up for a minute. It's not that somebody's got to come up with guidelines. Somewhere along the way, the NFL has to start taking it seriously. And you know, just because I kind of insist on drawing this thing back to what I deem to be a far more serious circumstance, not to put it on any sort of continuum, but I guess I am, that of a sitting circuit, a sitting U.S. District Court judge who is going to sit in judgment of other people who have done less and put them in prison for it.
Exactly.
I think, you know, there's a larger conversation to be had, Kevin, about how we treat this issue in society as a whole. Now, bear in mind, for instance, that the Freedom Protector Woods are and have been, since it was instituted, hopping up and down mad at the idea that if you get charged with domestic violence, they get to come and take away your guns out of the house. Assuming you go back in, you can't possess firearms, even though it's not a felony conviction. But see, I've got kind of icky feelings about the diversion programs because it seems like diversion programs are there for the people who can afford them. Now, I'm sure that somebody somewhere, an indigent defendant has maybe been given the opportunity to avail himself of one. But I'll bet you that the stakes or the statistics are a lot higher for people who hire lawyers. You see what I'm saying?
Probably, but I know here in Colorado.
The fact that a diversion program for domestic violence winds up with the offender, the violence perpetrator, not having any sort of record of having committed domestic violence, that's dangerous down the road.
Sure.
Let's try to put a face on this. Let's say you've got a 105-pound granny, and she has three glasses of wine with dinner instead of one, and her blood alcohol content goes to 0.081, and she gets popped for DUI.
Right.
Okay. I can see a diversion program for that because I don't think Granny is going to go out there and do that time after time after time after time.
No.
I believe in discretion in the court system, but for instance, this Judge Fuller, this guy operates on the federal sentencing guidelines. He has very little discretion. He just has to sit up there on the bench like the hypocrite he is, and, you know, he's not going to see that much in the way of domestic violence cases because he's dealing with federal laws and not state ones. In many jurisdictions, a state judge can be removed by an ethics committee or a judicial ethics commission. A state judge can be bounced at an election. Remember the outrageous story of the judge in Texas who beat the daylights out of his daughter over a video game?
Yep.
He wound up back on the bench, but they pulled him off for a little bit at least.
Yep.
But to allow this guy access to a diversionary program? Oh, hell no.
Well, you might send him to a diversionary program, but the fact that he sits in judgment of other people upon conviction, and in this case, he was, most of the time, at least here in Colorado, when you're sentenced to those diversionary programs, you plead guilty in lieu of saying you'll attend these diversionary programs, and if you complete them, then the conviction gets taken off your record. But essentially, he's a convicted domestic abuser, and that ought to be enough, regardless of what punishment he gets, to take him off the bench. I mean, that's just the way it should be.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at in terms of that larger discussion to be had, the Constitution says that that these judges are appointed for life and they serve at good behavior. But the only people with the power to judge whether the behavior is good or bad is the Congress.
Yep.
And how many, and I mean just because of who they are, and we don't even have to speculate a number. But just ask yourself, given the nature, the authoritarian nature and the sexist and misogynistic nature of a Republican generally, and especially your hard ultra hard right wing Republicans, how many men do you figure there are in the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives who have laid a little smack down on the little woman once in a while?
Oh yeah.
Because there are numbers out there that suggest that a whole lot more women get beaten than ever pick up the phone and call the police.
Sure.
That is an absolute fact. Oh, geez, I didn't realize this. Carol just clued me in. Apparently, Judge Fuller went to smacking his wife around because she caught him getting it on with his law clerk.
Yep.
Man, them Republican family values just won't quit. And see, this, and I see nothing out there to suggest that this guy's going to resign in disgrace.
No.
Why would you? Well,
why?
I mean, there are parallel issues here, Kevin. For instance, no one can compel a sitting member of the Supreme Court to recuse him or herself from a case in which they have an obvious interest.
Right.
No one polices that.
Nope.
They're absolutely unaccountable. There is nothing. I mean, understand, just to use an extreme example, let's say fat Tony Scalia walks out into the street and behaving true to his fascist roots, decides to just blow away somebody walking along First Avenue in front of the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. He just does it.
Yep.
Now, he's a constitutional originalist, so necessarily he's going to do it with a muzzle-loading single-shot pistol, but he does it just the same. Guess what? The other eight members of the court can't vote him off the island?
Yep.
Nobody can remove him from the court? There's no ethics commission to deal with him, and he can sit there up until the moment of his conviction, if and when it comes, and continue to judge cases and draw his salary and his retirement. And there is nobody in this country that enjoys that kind of protection except Article III federal judges.
Yep. But, yeah, we call ourselves a democracy. And that's as far away from a democracy as you can get.
Yeah.
Because there's no check and balance.
Precisely.
And so it doesn't leave you with a very good feeling, and that's what the last, 10 years have left me with, because for all the things I disagree with the president on, compared to what we've had before him and what we'll get after him, I'll take Barry Obama over anything that starts with the GOP, and I'll take him over most anything that starts with a D, because, you know, realistically, I guess for me the hypocrisy has gotten to such a level that I've checked out in a lot of ways. I can't listen to both you and Malloy every day anymore. Not because I don't want to. Not because I don't enjoy the programs. I just can't take it. You know, it gets to a point where the anger is so much inside you, and you feel like there's no outlet for it.
Well, you know, I understand that, and maybe, well, I like to think that by forming our little community and just talking through these things and bantering back and forth in the chat room on the phone, whatever, that we kind of clear out some, dare I say it, spiritual space for this kind of stuff. Instead, because I know at least for me, it's healthy to have these conversations instead of just sitting on the back stoop and you know, shotgunning $1.24 ounce cans of beer until it all goes away.
Yeah, that's not what I didn't mean outlet as in talking about it. I mean as I feel like there's nothing short of voting, there's nothing that can be done in a lot of these cases. Just like you're talking about with this judge. I would venture to say that very few of us in the Horn family believe that Congress would act to remove this guy, particularly the House.
Yeah, because, I mean, remember, there's a process here. He has to be impeached by the House and then tried by the Senate.
Right. And I could kind of see the Senate maybe doing the trial, but I don't think it would ever get to that because I don't see him being impeached by the Senate. So if I don't see that happening, what's there left for me to do but complain about it? You know, I mean, it.
Yeah, but in this conversation, Kevin, we're not just complaining about it. We're talking about potential solutions.
Oh, sure. But it, you know, I don't hear the outrage that I do over Ray Rice in the larger body, you know, throughout the country. If the Ray Rice story had never happened, nor any of these other domestic violence cases in the NFL had happened, would this judge's story even be on our radar then as a country? How many people know about it now?
It did get reported. You know, I'm linking it to Ray Rice simply because I think, not in terms of injury or violence done, but I think this is that Mark Fuller's case is actually a more important one, because while things have been done from a commercial and business standpoint vis-a-vis Ray Rice, nobody's going to touch Mark Fuller.
Right.
Nobody.
Exactly. Yeah, I understand what you mean. The act itself is just as atrocious, but the larger importance, Ray Rice doesn't sit in judgment of anybody. He doesn't do anything but carry a football and make money playing football. This judge sentences people to prison. And I know if I were being judged for
a crime...
Isn't
Don Siegelman still in prison?
I think so. I'm not sure. I had just left... I left Alabama in 89. When did the Siegelman trial happen? What? Originally, when did it first break?
Oh, that's in the aughts.
Yeah. It was the early 2000s. So I kind of followed that because I still had some roots in Alabama. But even that one, God, you look at how that was done. And again, I go back to, where's the indignation? Where's the outrage over what happened to Don Siegelman?
Well, it could never get any traction because the for-profit media in this country largely won't pay attention to it, especially during the Bush years, because there would be you might get Dan Rathered, frankly.
Well, yeah.
But there's a larger issue of how we understand domestic violence. And this is not, each individual instance of domestic violence is not a crime against an individual, most of the time, woman. Vast majority of the time, woman. If you were to look in most jurisdictions, for instance, at an indictment for domestic violence in a circuit court on a felony count, it would say the people of the state of, okay, let's deal with my state. It would say the people of the state of West Virginia versus asshole.
Yep.
It would not say asshole's wife versus asshole. That's the civil proceeding. That's the divorce. The criminal proceeding is done in the name of the people collectively of the state.
Right.
And it's just a thing that has to happen. There are magic words that have to be in an indictment in the state of West Virginia in order for the indictment to stand. And the last thing that an indictment has to say in this state is against the peace and dignity of the state. So
right.
We understand that what we're talking about here is a crime against society as a whole. Not just one bad night with one drunk asshole and one poor woman.
Right.
And I don't know if we've gotten to the point, Kevin, where we understand that factually and conceptually.
I don't think in the country we understand.
We're still struggling to get people to understand that rape is not a crime of sex or a crime of passion, but a crime of intense and horrifying violence, again, against the peace and dignity of this country, of these states as a whole.
Right.
I mean, because those legal concepts, what they're trying to tell us is that our society as a whole is harmed. Our society as a whole is diminished and demeaned by virtue of felonious criminal conduct. And we don't see it that way. We see a multi-tiered system of justice where the quality of the lawyer you hire has everything to do with the quality of defense that you receive. Where if you're some poor schlub, and I'm not talking about domestic violence, I'm talking about anything.
Yeah.
If you're charged with a crime and you wind up with a public defender, the public defender will do the best job the public defender can, but the public defender's hands are tied in terms of the money they can pump into the case for experts or scientists or people to do analysis of the crime scene. And they also have 200 other cases at any given time.
Oh, yeah. I don't think people understand that. The level of what happens on a Monday morning and the number of cases that get passed on to both the public defender and the prosecutor for the state. Everything from misdemeanor to murder. And a lot of these cases are pleaded out. Whether or not the person's guilty, they're pleaded out for convenience. You plead to disturbing the peace, it's a $100 fine and case dismissed. Done with. And if you ain't got the resources to hire a lawyer to prove that you didn't disturb the peace, your best course of action is to go ahead and plead guilty and pay the fine and get it behind you. because you don't have the resources. I've seen that all. Well,
and we, look, I mean, that goes across the board. I read somewhere that 98% of people who are malpracticed upon never even talk to a lawyer. No. Most people who are hurt in car wrecks never talk to a lawyer. They just wait for the adjuster to call and, well, he gave us $1.25. What more could we expect? He said he'd pay our medical bills.
Wow.
And then and they sign on, and boom, it's over. And you know, domestic violence cases come to trial and get pled out because this, and it's because the system is not designed to try cases, Kevin.
Right.
It is designed to resolve disputes. That's kind of a high-minded way of saying settle or plea bargain or whatever. Whenever you've got a really hot and heavy prosecutor's race going on, whoever's challenging the incumbent will say, well, he concludes 98% of the cases by plea bargain. I'm going to be tough on crime. I'm going to come. And the asshole's going to come in, and it's going to be the same way because the court system, the judicial structure, does not have time to try a bunch of cases.
Oh. No. And for every case that does get tried, the cost to the people, to you and me, is passed
on. Oh, the cost, well, the costs are astronomical for a case.
Yeah.
I've got, and, you know, I was going to kind of save it for prayer meeting Wednesday, but we don't have to. I got a case here, and you know, they're not cheaper in Canada. I got a story here of a case out of Canada where a Roman Catholic priest was charged with 80 counts of child rape. Pled guilty to 8, and I guess the judicial system in Canada is a little bit different, and the judge then looked at all the charges and figured that it had been going on so long that there was not a realistic chance of trying about 50 of the counts for a variety of reasons. And so the judge then said that the conviction would be upon 30 counts.
Yeah.
I don't understand that system, but then again, I don't have to. But you know, here's a guy who's 67 years old who raped children 80 times. Oh, and by the way, he also raped one sled dog because there was a count of bestiality in there, too. The trial, and the larger point is that the trial of the case started last year. Now, understand that when one judge is trying one case, one judge can't try two.
Yep.
So that means that entire judicial docket ground to an absolute halt for that judge in that courtroom while that went on.
Yep.
And if you're in a little jurisdiction, a tiny little county with one circuit judge, the cases are just going to back up and back up and back up and back up until that trial is over. So the prosecutor has a vested interest in pleading the thing out. The court has, the judge has a vested interest in pleading the thing out. The defendant has a vested interest in pleading the thing out. The thing is going to, unless it is an absolute, absolute, absolute impasse, is going to plead out.
Yep.
Because depending on how the jurisdiction breaks, it's not just the criminal cases that aren't going to go. Time out. Nobody needed to hear that. The civil docket is going to grind to a halt too. So that's the woman who went in for a mastectomy and got the wrong breast removed and then wound up getting them both removed, or the sponge or the scalpel left inside some poor human being. That's the person who got mangled in an auto wreck. And the thing that I'm trying to come to through all of this, Kevin, is that we need a total rewrite of our judicial system.
I would agree.
And we and a country that's serious about justice, we don't need one judge. You know, no, we need oodles of judges. and a country that bitches about lawyers and makes jokes about what do you call 35 lawyers in a bus going over a cliff with one empty seat? A darn shame. We need more lawyers. We need more people out there protecting the rights of victims. We have law schools that churn out thousands of lawyers every year, and because of the cost of law school, they wind up going into practice with corporations and doing the bidding of corporations and insurance companies because they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of student debt to negotiate.
Yep.
But we're not churning out thousands of lawyers every year for people who are butchered by doctors. We're not churning out, and look, we've got a deficit in the federal judiciary right now because the Republicans will not are appalled at the notion that, you know, that man, that one in their White House would be able to appoint judges just like every other white president before him has done. They're not going to tolerate it.
Well, not to mention that they also are the ones that propose the so-called tort reform so that it made it harder for people to file lawsuits when you were malpracticed upon or injured in a car accident because supposedly the judgments were getting too high, which is total BS.
It's not unusual to this day, Kevin, for somebody to in the right wing to bring up that con artist old woman who made $1 million off of McDonald's because she didn't know that coffee is hot.
Yep.
I mean, they're still trading on that when the facts that actually apply to the case are that McDonald's had been repeatedly warned that their coffee was too hot, that they were serving it too hot, that it was likely to cause burns. But the marketing guys at McDonald's said, yeah, but if we heat it that hot, the smell of the coffee permeates the restaurant, and we smell more coffee. And so when this lady spilled her coffee in her car, she received third-degree burns across her entire genital area.
Yep.
But the jury's verdict, who heard all of the things that I just mentioned to you and returned a verdict appropriate to the situation, well, the jury's verdict was excessive, and it showed that there's a judicial hellhole, and them trial lawyers is out there just trying to ruin the free market capitalist enterprise system for Marca.
And I would venture to say that, like a lot of things, until it happens to you, you don't begin to understand that. You don't begin to understand the pain and suffering that woman went through from the time she received the burn to the time it went to court, probably for a lifetime, considering where the injuries were, and in ways that you can't even begin to think of, it affects her because of where the injuries were. And you know, that's what's so maddening to me, is people don't take time to consider something and think it out. We hear a soundbite on TV, and we think that's the whole story.
Well, because that is how it is presented. But you know what?
Sure.
If you apply a little bit of critical reasoning, there is no what's the average package on the evening news? 2.5 minutes tops.
Yep.
How can a story even of a jaywalking case be encapsulated in 2 minutes broadcast time? That includes the stand up of the reporter, a little bit of video, some voiceover, maybe a couple of actualities from people involved. There is no way that a 2.5 minute package can take in even simple cases, let alone complex issues.
Sure.
But the right wing in this country sees that 2.5 minute package and they say, liberal bias, that's what that is, that's your liberal media. And most people just watch it and think that they've gotten the entire story. And
yep.
Very few are those among us who watch something like that and say, I wonder what the real story is. You know, that for all that TV news is, with the immediacy in the video and yada, 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 that's the difference between print media, newspapers, and magazines, and electronic media, even extending into this medium in which I work. I mean, we work long form here because we try to get as much detail as possible into a conversation. But, you know, some nights I joke and I say, well, we could spend the rest of the night on this, and sometimes we do, or sometimes I say, you know, we could do a week's worth of programs on this, because it's true. But we live, but we live in a culture where, you know, where the food has to be able to go into the microwave and be out of the microwave in a minute.
Yep.
And complex issues have to be digestible inside 2.5 minutes because, by God, we've got some gold to sell in the next commercial break.
Yep. Yep. I wouldn't disagree with anything you say. I mean, I don't know if you got the email about the story about the cop down in Florida that's proposing that guns are the solution to domestic violence.
Oh, God, yeah.
Bob, just on the face of it, the headline alone, I went, what? You introduce a gun into a domestic violence incident? Who do you think's going to be the loser in that? It's not going to be the perpetrator.
Nine times out of ten, the victim. Give me that. Bang.
Yep. But yet there are going to be people out there that are going to read that article and think, yep, that's the solution. Carry a gun with you at all times. And that couldn't be farther from the truth, because we are human. You, me, everybody else have at one time or another lost our temper over something, and thank God I didn't have a gun during some of those times. And if I can reason that out for my little self, why is it so hard for other people, especially on the right, not to think to themselves, that's not a very good idea, you know? And it goes back to what you're saying about we have to have everything now, and we don't look into stories in depth. I mean, there's more than enough evidence out there now for global warming. It's not even a debate anymore in any thinking person's mind. It's not a debate. I see the effects of it here in Colorado on a daily basis. And yet, there are people out there still denying it. And the world could start exploding tomorrow from one continent to another, and some of these teabaggers would still be denying global warming's the cause, and I mean that literally. You could see fires start from one end of the continent to the other, and people would still be denying that global warming was the cause. So, you know, I'm hoping.
But, you know, with very few exceptions, what you're describing there, Kevin, is an almost uniquely American phenomenon. And I have to remind myself of that from time to time. Now, I guess some of this applies in Australia because of Tony Abbott. Some of it applies in Canada because of Stephen Harper. But if you sit, you know, if you walk into a pub in London and say, what do you think about global warming? Is global warming a hoax? Well, they'll probably cut you off and not give you a pint because it's obvious you're drunk. It's not a debate in China. It's not, unless Steve writes in to tell us otherwise. It's not a debate in Germany. It's not a debate in Italy or France or Sweden or Norway or Finland. It ain't a debate.
No.
Unfortunately, here we are, 330 million human beings out of 6 billion on the planet, and the 330 million are making it are in the midst of making it a hell of a lot harder for the 6 billion to survive.
Yeah.
And the thing that terrifies me, I'm not sitting here throwing out apocalyptic visions, because I get a charge out of them. I am scared to death that maybe not in my lifetime, maybe not in the lifetime of my children, but somewhere down the road, I am scared to death, and I don't get scared of a lot, Kevin. I am scared to death that somewhere down the road, the rest of the world is going to look at this nation that is not taking climate change seriously and decide that there is only one way to deal with us. You know, they say, well, you know, we asked nicely, we presented them with the science and everything. And what happens if the world tries to call the United States to heel for its brutal climate conduct and the fact that we won't do a damn thing? Well, then we roast the globe, right? Because, you know, all them nukes sitting there.
Well, that's it. That's the only, I firmly believe that's the only reason we haven't seen a Third World War start. Is because too many countries have nukes now that you would be crazy to start a Third World War because there's only one way it can end. You know? And even someone like George Bush knows that. You know, you can start a war with Iraq because they can't defend themselves. But by God, you don't want to start a war with China because China's got the same nuclear arms you do and can aim them just as well as you can. And it's been unique. You talked about that being unique to America. For something like 236 years now, however long it's been, we've deluded ourselves into thinking that it's the American way, by God, that's the only right way. And that in a nutshell describes us, everything that's bad about our country. We're arrogant.
Well, yeah, but where climate change is concerned, it's not. I don't think it's arrogance, Kevin. Climate change denial is driven by people who pay other people to deny climate change.
Oh yeah.
The Koch brothers drive climate change denial.
Yeah, but for those people that don't have the money of the Kochs and yet who still believe the BS that the Kochs put out.
Right, but they believe the BS because the people the Kochs pay to spout the BS are talking to the nitwits.
Yeah. But that's kind of what they're playing.
And the nitwits believe it because it's what's known as bias confirmation. They don't want
exactly.
there to be global. They don't want there to. They want there not to be climate change. So somebody comes along and says there isn't. They go, okay, good.
Yep.
Exactly. Because they want to live on a planet. Frankly, Kevin, they want to live on a fantasy planet.
Yep.
They want to live on a fantasy planet where we can consume, and there are never any consequences. They want to live on a fantasy planet where little Keebler elves are constantly making more coal under the ground. They want to live on a fantasy planet where there's natural gas forever and oil forever. They want to live on a fantasy planet where solar and wind can't really be counted on to generate electricity, even if it is in other parts of the world.
Yep.
You know, what was it that Duchess Dumbass of Denali said when they pointed out that Alaska is on the same latitude as Germany, with all of Germany's sustainable, renewable energies? Well, they get more sunlight.
Yep.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Goddamn dumbass. No, they don't.
Yep.
But nobody dares call her a dumbass to her face because she is insulated from that.
Oh, you only have to look at that family incident they had the other night.
Oh, for heaven's sakes! I saw some more of the. You know where that thing started? Now that we're going to be shallow and talk gossipiness. That thing got started because Track, one of the Palin sons, Track went
yep.
to this big party and he was already apparently liquored up out of his mind, and started hitting on married women. By hitting, I don't mean punching. I mean making unwanted advances toward, and told one of them about how he'd like to bend her over in the grass. At which point, her husband clocked him. At which point, Yahoo of the Yukon had to come screaming up and holler, "Do you know who we are?"
Yep.
And all of it right there it was on poor old Tad's 50th birthday.
Yep. Well, couldn't happen to a nicer family. That's all I gotta say. You know, I have very little respect for anybody in that family because they don't have any respect for us. That's just the truth. That's what's wrong with most of the one percenters in this country. There is no respect for anybody else but themselves. So, you know.
There you go. Hey, Kevin, it's been a great conversation. Thanks so much. It's good to talk to you after such a long time.
Yep, I enjoyed it, Bob, and I'll talk to you later on.
All right, you take care, Kevin. Bye.
Bye-bye.
11 minutes past the hour. That's our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Line open, 304-574-8178. Haven't taken a break this evening. Going to do that. You're welcome to chime in or Skype to Skype is always free. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, if you want to reach out that way. It works either way. Email comes into BobKincaid@gmail.com. You can catch me on Twitter @BobKincaid and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Then there's and I encourage you to join the group, by the way, The Head On Radio Network. It's a group on Facebook, and if you ask to join up, I'll probably see it, and we'll get you membered up right into the group, just lickety-split. We have, thank you very kindly to Kate and Asa, we have met the final challenge of the evening, the challenge that Steve issued shortly after walking into a light pole in New York on 42nd Street in New York. So thank you very much. Don't let that slow you down. If you want to get a little head start toward the rest of the week, that would make prayer meeting Wednesday a little bit easier too. So thanks one and all, and there's no way to express it but to say that that's the only way that this continues, this little independent broadcasting effort. It is, of course, Tuesday. That means we have the Green News Report coming up. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen always enjoy it. They do such a great job. So a little break coming up. Conversation Radio, we've got a line on hold right now. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Take me piece by piece till it. my fortune in the bottom of this coffee cup. Can you tell me how to tell when I've had enough? Morning's a big will put on. Night's a girl who's gone too far. Whiskey's harder to keep than a woman, and it's happy. Women without whiskey. Whiskey's hard to beat. Whiskey's hard to beat.
It's Tuesday, September 16, 2014.
It has not been this hot in California in 120 years.
Baby, it's hot outside. Hottest year on record in California. Hottest August for the entire planet.
This was a direct hit by a powerful Category 3 hurricane.
Record hurricane hits Cabo San Lucas. Plus, Burlington, Vermont, now 100% renewable.
Way to go, Burlington. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
I'm no scientist, but I have never bought into all the alarmism around climate change. Why fear change? Maybe Earth is just going through puberty.
Well, that would explain it. This is your Green News Report.
Our glaciers are dropping, jungle is cropping up in strange places, and sometimes we wake up and find our streets all wet. It's natural.
Okay, Desi Doyen, perhaps we should explain to listeners before we begin that if we are sloggier today than usual, it is only because we are in the middle of this unending heat wave out here in California.
It's a record heat wave, in fact.
I also want to note that I have been whining, yes, I will say it, whining all year long about how warm it has been in California, in the middle of the worst drought ever, but we never had a winter, and it seems as if last summer really never ended. And now there is science to back me up.
Yes, science does back you up. 2013 was the hottest year on record in California, but it looks like it's going to be surpassed by 2014. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has announced that California is officially now in its hottest year on record to date, January through August of this year, clocking in at one full degree warmer than the previous record set in 1934, according to NOAA scientist Jake Crouch on KPCC.
California beats a previous record by more than 1 degree. That might not sound like a lot, but when we usually talk about year-over-year temperatures, we're talking about fractions of a degree. And so the fact that we're more than 1 degree above the previous record is quite a large jump.
It is a large jump, but let me also make one complaint about KPCC, one of our public radio stations out here in California. The teaser we used at the top of the show.
It has not been this hot in California in 120 years.
Is misleading. The fact of the matter is we have only been keeping temperature records for 120 years. So it's not as if it was this hot 121 years ago. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
So I hate that when they say it hasn't been this hot in 120 years. That's when we started keeping records. They should make that clear. Just saying.
But it's even worse than that globally. August 2014 is now officially the hottest August on record. That's according to NASA, since record-keeping began 134 years ago.
I have been told that global warming has paused. I have been told that it's getting cooler. I have been told I got to stop watching Fox. That's all there is to it.
Yes, you do. Meanwhile, that heat is turbocharging unprecedented extreme weather events. On Sunday, Hurricane Odile entered the record books as the strongest hurricane to hit Cabo San Lucas in Baja California. It hit as a Category 3 hurricane.
gusts blew down the glass doors in this hotel lobby, even with a couch blocking it. And this hotel shuttle van was flipped over like a toy. 11 inches of rain fell in just 1 hour.
So far, however, no deaths have been reported in the popular tourist destination. But Odile ain't over yet. Folks in Arizona are bracing for more flash flooding from the remnants of Odile just 1 week after Pacific Hurricane Norbert gave Phoenix its wettest day in history.
This hurricane is actually going to kick up a lot of moisture into the desert southwest, so expect flooding once again, places like Tucson, Phoenix, Albuquerque, Las Vegas.
Sadly, it looks like California won't be so lucky. We're now in our third year of historic drought here, and Odile is poised to bypass us.
It's interesting that Fox News did not go wall-to-wall with this hurricane out in Cabo. I guess it doesn't go along with their narrative that, oh, we don't have many hurricanes anymore, unlike what scientists told us. Well, scientists told us there would either be more hurricanes or larger hurricanes. And we are definitely seeing larger hurricanes all across the globe. This one was, as you say, the first ever Category 3 to hit Cabo.
And in the Pacific, it's partly due to a blob of record warm water that is extending all the way up to Alaska.
A blob? Is that a scientific term?
Yeah, that's what I'm calling it. Marine biologists this week report new sightings of warm water fish in the Gulf of Alaska, where ocean temperatures are a full 5 degrees warmer than average for September. Finally, some good news. Vermont's largest city, Burlington, now uses 100% renewable electricity. A combination of hydroelectric, biomass, and wind give them stable prices that are not fluctuating with spikes in the price of oil.
Oh, I feel sorry for those people. How are they surviving the collapse of the economy in Burlington, Vermont?
Apparently things are going quite well. Thank you very much.
You mean it's not an apocalypse now that they've gotten rid of fossil fuels?
No apocalypse necessary.
I got to get better news sources. Sorry, Steve Ducey. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website, if it hasn't melted, at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I really can't
but
stay.
But baby, it's hot
outside.
Got to go
but
away.
Baby, it's hot.
Cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop in.
Oh, they are such a cute and creative little couple, aren't they? Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen with the Green News Report. Let's not shilly-shally about any further, but go straight to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
I got a kind of a historical question I was thinking about.
I'll try.
I think you'll probably do pretty good. When the Europeans started their invasion, occupation of the New World, I remember reading in history one of the things that they drank a lot, but one of the reasons, one of the rationales I heard for that was that they couldn't drink the water. It was there. I mean, like fresh water, do you have to purify it or can you, if the stream's pure, can you just drink it? Is there bacteria and stuff you have to worry about? Because I've seen that show.
Well, there's
naked and.
If you're standing by a big river, you probably don't want to drink. I mean, even 500 years ago, you probably didn't want to drink a big gulp. But that's not to say that there aren't other sources. The problem, though, the larger problem, because I've actually read a little bit about this, is that the European invaders brought their bad habits with them. And so back in Europe, where they were dumping shit and piss in the streets, or just because, remember, the church thought that any kind of science was demonic. So and there were no, you know, there were no meaningful sewer systems or what there were in very isolated places. So they couldn't drink the water. And they knew nothing of germs. So they brought that habit with them. We'll drink wine and beer instead. There was plenty of fresh water in the I don't even like the phrase New World in the Western Hemisphere. Plenty of it. springs bubbling out, and there was no want for fresh water. And it's not like the indigenous people who lived here had not figured out that you don't shit or piss upstream from where you take your drinking water downstream. Tenochtitlan in the lands of the Triple Alliance in what is now Mexico had public fountains throughout a city of at least 100,000 people. They had a sewer system, flush toilets. And of course, you know, the Europeans looked at it and went, demons! They lacked the technology and they lacked the mental faculties to understand what was going on. And besides that, they kind of liked living their lives, you know, fucked up out of their minds.
Yeah.
I've seen some reports that, for instance, the founders of the nation, the signers of the Declaration of Independence and the framers of the Constitution, those dudes were pounding down 3 gallons of wine a day. And some of them were chasing it with a pint of laudanum. Now, the right wingers and everything who want to revere and there was obvious genius involved. I mean, James Madison would be a genius today. Jefferson would be too. And a lot of them would be. Because of the level of education they had at the time and the stuff that they had read and the development of their faculties. But they were drunker than Adam's off ox. You know, everybody loves, Jim, the story of Johnny Appleseed. Well, I remember reading Michael Pollan's Botany of Desire, which is a wonderful book, many, many years ago. And he talks about, and in it, he talks about the propagation of apples. When John Chapman went down the Ohio River in a boat with apple saplings and got off the river somewhere around Marietta, Ohio, and headed west across Ohio and into Indiana, planting little apple orchards along the way, there wasn't an apple produced by any of those trees that was fit for a human being to eat. They weren't planted for purposes of producing apples for pies or apples for apple butter or apples for anything but pressing into juice and making into cider, because this continent, the westward expansion, was fueled by drunks.
Yeah,
that's kind of a long-winded answer, but I mean, does that answer your question?
No, that's basically kind of what I thought. I kind of figured the natives of the country figured out a way to not spoil the environment nearly as much, or, you know, as, and what you pointed out, you know, how the Europeans didn't even worry about, well, because the way the society was built, you know, they just go to the bathroom in the street, basically, almost. And,
well, you know, you just, yeah. You know, you've got a slop jar there by the bed. What a disgusting word. Yeah, I mean, just, ugh. And, you know, you get up in the middle of the night and you take a whiz in the slop jar or dump or whatever. And the next morning, you know, it's morning in London, and you just fling the windows open and out into the street.
Yeah, well, it was kind of like Mighty Python with the bring out your dead and all the trash and stuff. But because that show, I don't know if you've seen it, I've seen a couple of them, kind of interesting, Naked and Afraid, where they put people on an island pretty much, you know, totally naked, and the naughty bits, thank God the naughty bits are locked out. But the thing is, right off the bat, because what I find interesting about that show is, and I'm not sure how staged it is, it seems pretty unstaged to me, but anyway, it doesn't matter how beautiful the woman is, after a day or two, you know, right off the bat, you're thinking about water, shelter. If you're light skinned, like, you know, I don't tan very well. So, you know, getting out of the sunlight or limiting the sunlight, you know, depending on where you are, would be, you know, building a shelter would be, you know, your primary objective. And like I noticed, they have to find water and then they have to cook the water. And these are supposedly relatively pristine environments that they put them on. And I was just wondering if that's just the way water, you know, water's just like that all over the world. Maybe just pollution or contamination. But they seem to point out that it's because of the bacteria in the water. That I was wondering.
Well, most of the time it's E. coli. Sometimes it's, you know, I mean, amoebic dysentery. There are pathogens in water. It's possible to dig wells. And as technology increased, you know, drill them. We've got a drilled well here that goes down to 72 feet, and it used to be the most crystal clear, delightful water you ever drank in your life. You know, until the coal company came along and ruined it.
So that water in the well, that's all right. The water in a stream would not be...
Water in a well, as long as the well is protected and doesn't get contaminated. Water in the well is fine. Because it's, you know... We were tapped into a vein here that, yeah, God knows, that water had been there for 5 million years, probably. It's kind of like one of the concerns, and a significant concern it is, of the people who happen to live near where the Keystone XL pipeline, the northern leg, wants to run. You know, right smack dab over top of the Ogallala Aquifer that provides fresh water for the whole middle of the United States.
No, we don't need food. We need oil. We'll figure out a way to make food out of oil.
Right, and well, I mentioned Michael Pollan a minute ago. He also wrote a brilliant book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, in which he talks about modern food structure. And he said, when you get right down to it, the modern diet consists of diesel fuel and number two field grade genetically modified corn.
Yeah.
And that's not even passing judgment on the genetically modified part. The fact of the matter is, high fructose corn syrup, or its dry equivalent, maltodextrin, I believe is what it's called, is a major component of just about everything we consume. And it entered the diet in about 1985, on a large scale. And shortly after that, you begin to see the explosion of pandemic levels of type 2 diabetes in this country.
Wow, man, it's like everything these bastards touch.
Everything they touch, their byproduct on their end is money, and the byproduct on our end is caca. You know, the people, the Keystone people, TransCanada, those jackasses, they don't give a damn what happens to the water in Nebraska or Minnesota or the Dakotas.
Yeah,
they don't give a good goddamn what happens to that water. They don't live there.
I know. I understand that, Bob. But the thing is, I mean, I'm you know, smarter than the average bear. Well, you know, relatively average bear. But I can see where, just like another invasion of this country again by the Europeans, you know, where they would just shoot buffalo from the trains and just leave them there, you know, they'd shoot it as sport. Whereas, you know, the natives here, that was a prime food source for them.
Absolutely, and everything on a buffalo got consumed, whether it be the horn, the hide, the sinew, the bone, the meat, the gristle, everything got consumed and put to use. But and to try to get a handle on the scope of that, Jim, you're absolutely right. Just think, anybody who drives out across Kansas Stan or Nebraska Stan or the Dakota Stans, all of that, just imagine that huge herds of bison that, as far as the eye could see, and we managed to kill them off inside 100 years down to extinction levels for fun. I mean, it's kind of like comparing that to what Kurt Vonnegut said about Appalachia, that inside of 100 years, people in Appalachia had destroyed their entire region for heat. And it's the truth. I mean, West Virginia, Central Appalachia generally, is one of the... And you know what? We've got historical names for places around here that begin with the word buffalo or include the word elk. Because buffalo and elk weren't... Buffalo didn't just run on the plains. They also wandered in the woods. And they got killed off. But you know, this is one of the most well-watered and in many ways where you are, you know, that's another kinship that Appalachia shares with the bayous. You know, access to clean water. And in both places, the one thing that has been poisoned more than any other thing is the water. The chemical industry, the refining industry, the oil industry, the gas industry. I mean, there are still, I know of a couple of places not too far from here. One of them where I actually took a sample several years ago and it was tested. And it's a little place in the mountains where water just comes bubbling out of the rock. There's just a crack in the rock and water just flows constantly out of it. I've never seen it not flowing. And it was tested. It tested clean, no heavy metals, no biologicals. It was just clean, pure water. And my God, it was good.
Yeah, now you've got, quote unquote, air quotes here, water companies trying to get every drop of fresh water and bottle it and sell it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Eventually, capitalism will find a way to put a price on everything. I mean, they've already got a price on water. You're on a public water supply, aren't you?
Yeah.
So yeah, you pay a bill to some water company every month. And being Louisiana, Stan, I'm guessing it's probably a private entity that's out there servicing shareholders.
Oh, that's the other thing that you mentioned. It's just that I'm just sensitive or aware of it, but this mad rush to just how great private enterprise is and how you talked about it. Tom Hartman's talked about it. Several other people talk about it. Just the total tearing down of the commons. You know, Malloy's talked about it. So, and if you try to talk to anybody, everybody I know is just oblivious to it, or you know, they think I'm crazy. You know.
Well, you're not in a place, Jim, that's going to be necessarily welcoming to the kind of questions you're going to ask. I mean, for God's sakes, this latest story about Bobby Jindal just—oh my God!
Which one was that? I missed it.
Oh, where he was talking about, you know, science this and science that, and then somebody said, "Well, Bobby, well, Piyush, do you believe in evolution? Is evolution real?" At which point he started the tap dance.
Yeah.
And see, with capitalists love science that can be used to make money. They have no use for non-monetized science. So, you know, let's say there's a telescope that can look, you know, we've looked so far into the center of the universe that we're looking back in time to the very origins, you know, minutes after the Big Bang. Well, a capitalist asks, well, how can I make a buck off of that? Where's the point in knowing that? Unless, of course, it's unless the giant telescope was manufactured by some capitalist enterprise. I just saw a story today where NASA is going to team up with SpaceX to create space taxis, things to run stuff back and forth, you know, rockets to run stuff back and forth to the space station.
Yeah, I've noticed that. That's what I mean. Everything's got to have. I mean, even what they talk about space, they're talking, well, somewhere down the road, this can be a really good business venture for maybe in the future sometime.
Well, I mean, we were talking about water systems a minute ago. It's not like there aren't other models. I mean, I got a note from our friend Jenny in Wisconsin last night when I mentioned Vince Lombardi. But look at the model of the Packers ownership. There are shares in the Green Bay Packers that are non-transferable and don't pay dividends. It's just that everybody in the community owns the Packers. Well, what if everybody in the community owned the water system? You wouldn't have to pay share dividends, but everybody would support it, and yes, everybody would have a bill, but that bill would be lower because the first and foremost principle of business is to support the shareholders and pay dividends. See, West Virginia American Water, that provides water all through this region, the water system ain't worth shit. Even though I wasn't part of the system that got poisoned last January, at the same time we were in the middle of some very hard weather, and the entire little municipality that I live near went down for a couple of days because one of the ancient pipes under the road froze and just exploded all to hell. Because all the money goes into the shareholders and not into the system.
No, I know. You're preaching to the converted. I was just thinking maybe it was like another different reason. I don't know why, because it always ends up being the same reason. It's basically profit and money. I was going to touch on you talking to about that federal judge. Now, he was appointed. Now, that's an appointment for life, right?
Correct.
And he can't be removed? Even if he's convicted of a felony?
He can be removed, Jim, but the only means of removing him is by impeachment by a majority vote of the House of Representatives.
Is that just a straight majority, or is it two-thirds?
I think it's a straight majority, but the problem is after he's impeached, well, then he has to be tried.
Right.
And it moves over to the Senate.
No, because it's funny you should mention that, because when my dad was doing his so basically what you're saying is a federal judgeship's a pretty good gig as far as job security. You have to really screw up to lose it, right?
Well, right. It's the appointment is for life at good behavior, and there's just not a hell of a lot out there that an ordinary person, Jim, with ordinary intellect would think, guy just got busted for beating up his wife. And there are these things out there called judicial canons of judicial ethics that talk about how a judge should behave and the sort of rectitude, this bubble of rectitude that should surround him or her. And one of those is that a judge should always avoid a judge shall avoid impropriety. That means, you know, a judge should avoid doing improper things. No. The canons say that a judge should avoid the appearance of impropriety, even the appearance of it. So how does it appear if you've just beaten the snot out of your wife?
Right.
But the problem is the only way to do anything about it is to get the Congress to remove him from office. The president appoints a judge, and the Senate confirms the appointment, and then the judge does his job or her job. And should the judge transgress that line of good behavior, then the only remedy is to impeach him. And so, in short, it's almost like James Bond. It's a license to kill. I mean, Judge Fuller, even if he had maimed his wife and put her in a hospital, it would still fall to the Congress to impeach him. Even if he had shot and killed her, it would fall to the Congress to impeach him.
I mean, he could still be brought to criminal trial, but his judgeship would still be safe. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, so a federal judgeship is a pretty good gig.
It's a great racket. Now, I think there are, and I'm really searching my mind here. There's a possibility out there that I might be wrong. Because, of course, the Supreme Court, being the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court manages the circuits and the district courts, and the district courts manage the magistrates. And so there are these canons, these ethics rules, but how they're enforced, not so much. I mean, for instance, on a state court level, you know, in West Virginia, for instance, we elect our magistrates and our circuit judges and our Supreme Court. And so they, well, for instance, we had a Supreme Court justice a few years back. He's since mercifully dead, named Spike Maynard. And photographs came out of Spike Maynard literally taking a vacation on the French Riviera with Don Blankenship. Remember Don, right? He's the guy who got 29 human beings incinerated in the Upper Big Branch mine.
Well, yeah.
And Spike was a dear friend of Don's because they both came from the same county, Mingo. And thereafter, it was odious enough that the voters of this state looked at him when he was up for re-election and said, no, and bounced him out on his ass where he belonged. But that doesn't apply to a federal judge. You know, the Supreme Court in this and most other states manage the courts below them and can take action to remove a judge or a magistrate from office. But where a federal judge is concerned, it is an entirely different animal. I'm trying to remember, and if somebody's out there who knows, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think the Supreme Court can even order a district judge to step down in the case of impropriety.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that was, you know, when my dad had his little dance with the government back in the late 60s, a guy came to see him, and my dad was showing him, you know, the JFK stuff, blah, 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 and he's like, I'm not really interested in that. You could be doing better than this. And unless my dad was lying to me, which I doubt, the guy offered him a federal judgeship, which basically I'm sure would have been a pretty good one, i.e. an appointment for life. And he had the guy shown how. But, I mean, that shows how, you know, that they can offer you the candy first and then they go after you with the stick.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I think it was the 1970s when Senator Robert C. Byrd was offered a seat on the Supreme Court of the United States, and he said, no, thank you, I'd rather be a senator. He would have been right through the confirmation hearings back then. That was before the current nastiness we're involved in. But he believed in the nobility of the Senate.
Oh, I see, yeah, because
and, you know, he wanted to actually legislate. He wanted to actually engage in governance.
Okay. I just did
a cursory search online, and, yeah, the only way to get rid of a U.S. District Court judge is to impeach him.
Yeah, and I imagine the higher up you go, I don't have any details about that, but the higher up you would go, the harder it would be to get rid of them.
Oh yeah, and you know what? I mean, those loyal those Republicans in the House, a whole bunch of them are still loyal Bushies, and they're no sooner going to impeach a Bush appointee than they would vote for a piece of legislation that that one wanted.
Yeah, the brown skin president.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't. Well, I'm gonna let you go on that. You basically answered my questions.
I got to check in on the cheese.
Okay. I got. It's great, but it is hot, man. You got, in fact, I'm gonna try it on some burritos. It is definitely hot, you know, but I can hang with it.
Well, you're a Louisianan, man.
Yeah.
You don't run from no hot stuff.
No.
It ain't even hot till it's making your eyes water, is it?
No, but it's. I can tell it's hot. You know, you take a look, because what did I eat it on? I just put it on little slices of potato last night. And then I ate it. I ate another piece, and I could feel that I ate it the next day, kind of.
Yeah, well, there's a payoff or a payback.
Yeah.
So the next thing I need you to do is, when you get to the grocery store, I need to hear back if Kaneka smoked sausage is available even in Louisiana, because it's going to blow your mind when you taste it.
All right, I'll get on that.
All right, you take it easy, Jim. Good to hear from you.
All right.
Bye now. Calling from Louisiana, Stan, that's our buddy Jim. And a reminder, since we got into a little food porn there, there are two offers that are still out there. And if you would like to try the smoky ghost pepper cheese that Jim was referencing, Jim, who is not at all scared of spicy stuff, that goes for $100 contribution, and send me your address and whether you want the smoky ghost pepper cheese or the pistachios. And Sparky will get right on that, and he will track it electronically all the way to your very door. Also, for a $75 contribution, the Carol's offering of the Ozark munchy food porn basket, your choice of buffalo cheddar or spicy Mediterranean or spicy Caribbean, hot, ultra hot, spicy Caribbean. Cheese, along with a beef stick and a jar of actual, no kidding, honest to God, yummy, delicious on your toast in the morning with some really nice butter, elderberry jam from the Missouri River Valley. Both of those are out there, and it will be a real treat for whoever takes that offer up. Back to the phones here with a little bit of time remaining in the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
That's what I'm calling you about. You guys have covered some nice subjects tonight, but what the hell is going on with the United States and the Soviets over the Ukraine? This talk I've been hearing, these people are out of their freaking minds. They want to go, they're talking about going to war with the Russians. NATO versus the Russians. What is this, a football game?
Well, I mean, we had that clip from Mike Huckabee. Apparently, it's at least an Arkansas basketball game, because I've read the end of the book and we win. Sons of Isaac going to beat the sons of Ishmael.
But Bob, you know the Russians still have a huge amount of nuclear weapons.
That they do,
and you think they're going to sit still and not use them?
I don't. I don't
no,
at all.
Stacey, man, well, I'll never forget the Cuban Missile Crisis, especially when I learned a lot more than I knew was going on.
Yeah, it gets scarier the more we know. But I mean, this much I'll say, I think thus far, President Obama is getting it right. Now, I mean, he did go over to Estonia.
He went
over to Estonia and he said, "We will defend you," and I guess they felt like that was something the Russians needed to hear. But see, the right wingers will fight anybody for the sake of fighting. They just love to get a war on until it turns out that they're the ones who have to fight it. You know, these
But are these people that stupid that they don't realize that this isn't This isn't Saddam Hussein they're talking about?
No, but Bill, this is America, and God loves us more than it does Russia.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know who's right or wrong in that situation. I think the Ukrainians have a say because they've been connected with Russia for longer than I ever could remember.
Yeah,
that's the Russian breadbasket, huh?
Right. But you know, in the modern era, lines are seldom clearly drawn, and the Ukraine story is still deeply troubling. Because on the one hand, you've got the Russians and you've got Vladimir Putin's expansionist dreams of a restored Soviet empire without the communism.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you've got a Ukrainian movement that's got a shitload of Nazis marching around in it.
You got it. That's the problem. It's and you know, to me, the Soviet Union has been gone for years. The communist system has been gone for years. But they're basically right back to the rich man wins situation. Is that unusual about Russia, or did I miss something?
Yeah, but even during the Soviet era, there were there were an overarching class of well-to-do oligarchs. When the Soviet Union fell, they just sort of moved out into the open. You know, they were the people who in the Soviet Union got the nice cars. They were the people who had the dollars with which to shop for Western goods. They were the people who had the dachas in the country. They were always there. Now they're out in the open, and Moscow is one of the most expensive places to live on the planet. And yet at the same time, if you've got oodles of money, it's also one of the most, I don't want to say ritzy, but there's a lot of glitz and glamour and flash there. I mean, you're forever seeing pictures of Ferrari and Porsche showrooms and women in and beautiful women in furs and lots of diamonds.
Oh,
and
some of the Russian women are some of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And you should have seen the pictures you saw in the 50s, Bob. Holy God.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Back during the Cold War, it was almost as though it was illegal to show a photograph of a beautiful a Russian woman.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, they were all dowdy and frumpy with kerchiefs tied in their hair and better mustaches than Stalin had. But that was because we had to demonize the people in order to demonize the system.
About 1956, I met a whole lot of Hungarian refugees, and they would sit and talk about things, and, you know, that was no prize, that's for sure. But, you know, power and money are the same regardless of what nationality it's being, what national language they speak, you know? It's the same bunch.
Well, and ultimately, the language they speak is the language of cash. Hey, Bill, we got to get out of here, but it's good to talk to you.
I just wanted to make sure I hadn't missed something.
No, you
hadn't.
And the thing is, there's plenty to keep an eye on here 100 years after we embroiled ourselves in the first great modern abattoir meat grinder. Have yourself a good evening,
right.
Bill.
You go ahead, Bob. Go ahead. You got to get off the air, so go ahead.
All right. Take care.
I just wanted your opinion, because if anybody knows anything, I usually consider you might. You know, he has a good chance you know it.
I don't know, but I appreciate your trust. Take care, Bill. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Hey, got to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thanks for helping us get out of the hole this evening. Thank you, one and all, to our all-volunteer staff. And Gina, always, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.